dawn I let thee see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan. Or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. For being with us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Monday. It is the 29th.
Yep.
29th of August in the year 2005. And I hope you had a lovely weekend, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't know if you notice how fast the time is going, but it certainly flies. I was looking for... I'm sorry, I wasn't ready. Here, just a minute. I was looking for a particular verse that I wanted to do tonight for our spiritual message. Alan Watt is with us tonight, folks. And I had a couple. Oh, here we are. I found it. All right. I'm sorry about that. Our spiritual message this evening is from 1 John. 1 John, I don't know what they call it. 1 John, is it, Alan?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is chapter 4, beginning with verse 4. Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And then in verse 7, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loves is born of God and knows God. He that loves not knows not God, for God is love. And the very first verse of that, chapter 4, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. That's something to consider, keep in mind, isn't it, Alan?
It sure is, yeah.
Yeah, it sure is. Before we get started here tonight, by the way, thank you for being with us again tonight, Alan.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, yeah.
I wasn't able to get a hold of Jason. I got an answering machine at that number, left a message. But anyway, folks, I'll tell you, I'm going to give you the call-in number here. I'm not asking for dozens and dozens of calls, but... as you all know, we've had long-time problems with the reception, the quality of the broadcast, and I'm trying to keep very much on top of it, and if a couple of you would not mind giving us a call just to let us know how it's coming in tonight, if you can hear me. And this is shortwave listeners. I know the Internet is excellent. And I'm sure the C-band satellite is excellent. And I'm talking, of course, to our shortwave listeners. I wanted to say thank you to Sid and Julianne from Louisiana. I got a very precious call last Wednesday. And I hope that it is representative of many of you. Sid said that they had been listening for quite some time. And it finally, that because of the broadcast and the information that's presented on the broadcast, that he's awakened. And I asked him about his wife, and he said, well, he was the first to awaken. But when he began to explain to her, he said she's very intelligent, and she's right there with him. And, of course, it goes even beyond Julianne's... I might be saying the name wrong if I am. Julia. It's Julia. I'm sorry. It goes beyond just intelligence. It's trusting. The trusting of your mate. there are so many people that have a problem today in their marriages, in their relationships, because one is awakening and one isn't. And it makes it, it's a tragedy, is exactly what it is. And so if you are in a relationship, if you have a mate, and you're both learning and growing together, you are blessed. You are truly blessed. And do remember to say thank you for that blessing that you have. And Sid and Julia, thank you for your for calling, because, you know, there are so many times that I wonder, is this broadcast, is it making a difference for people? And, of course, our sponsorship has dropped down just terribly. And so I don't know if that has to do with, am I getting my mail, or is it time to let this go? If there are those of you listening, and you've been listening, and that you have found value in the information presented, this is not a threat. But I must tell you, folks, that it's getting, well, it's way beyond. Actually, it's way beyond the point where I should have. But I thought, well, let's hope that we can get, if we can get the reception again and get our listeners so that they can hear what's going on, maybe the sponsorship will pick up again. We'll see, but it's going to have to happen in a hurry. It really does. And I wanted to say happy birthday to Will in Missouri. And I wanted to let you guys know, I think I mentioned this, Alan, this Casey Nethercutt, a guy in Arizona, a rancher, who was protecting his property.
Yeah.
I guess he evidently, there must have been, you know, a fight, a struggle.
Uh-huh.
And a Texas judge issued a default judgment against this man for hitting an illegal alien that was on his property.
Yeah.
$850,000, and now Casey Nethercutt's ranch belongs to the illegal aliens.
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah, it's a warning for everybody.
Ha!
You know. That's a lesson that they put out there deliberately, because as Jack Satali said, they said this is in the millennium. He wrote about all of this, what was to happen to the southern U.S., and he said that the border would disappear, and
yep,
that was the agenda, and eventually that whole area would be Spanish-speaking, and we're watching it happen, of course, and people who don't really understand that this is the agenda will put up a resistance to it, and then they'll be penalized for doing so.
Well, actually, you know, there was headlines. This was a few years ago because Chuck was still here, and the headlines in USA Today said, if you can't speak Spanish, you might be left behind.
Uh-huh, yeah.
A headline, a big fat headline, front
yeah,
page.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the same stuff they used in the European Union, was when they were giving them the vote initially. They gave the vote to Britain and other countries. The public kept saying no, and they kept coming back with campaigns saying, well, if we don't join, we'll be left behind, as though we're going to miss out on something.
Yeah.
And it's the same techniques that they're using here, of course. Why change them when they work, you know?
Yeah.
But this is the agenda, and people will put up resistance, and they'll suffer because they'll get no backing at all from the United States government.
Or any court.
Or any court, yeah.
I think the important thing for us to get, and you and I spoke briefly earlier this evening, and folks, I want you to know that it's taken me a long time to get where I'm at, and I don't say that I've got it all, of course, but to see that there is nothing to go back to. I mean, my friend Betty Mills and I used to say, if we could stop it, and then, what, you know, actually, if you could bring yourself in your mind that you actually a miracle would happen. And I said, my God, Betty, where would we start to turn it around? And then it occurred to me, this has been a couple years now, I guess, that there is nothing to turn around, because the plan has been ongoing for millennia, And when you get into history and you see that in, well, Alan, like I was saying the other day, it occurred to me, anywhere there's a city, you have the very, very, very rich, and you have many, many, many who are in poverty.
Yeah.
And this has never really been not the U.S. of A., not America. They made us think it was a beautiful place to be, especially in the 50s, huh, Alan?
Absolutely.
And you remember what you were telling me earlier today?
Yes.
Will you tell our listeners that?
Yeah, well, it's the BBC is doing a lot of... they're actually filling in for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which is on strike. So the BBC's filling in with their worldwide service. And there's a little blurb on China showing some of the first civilian population to get to buy cars, to put down payments or deposits on them. And they said that China is starting to go through a boom equivalent to the U.S. in the 1950s. And they're just laying down thousands of miles a road at one incredible speed. And so the workers and the factory workers, the ones who make things, industry in other words, will have a boom for 20, 30 years. And that's just what happened to the U.S. when they were the manufacturer, you see. They allowed a certain amount of freedom, certain goodies and toys to play with and so on, cheap gasoline. And that's where China's getting today. They're getting all the goodies that the U.S. once had.
And it certainly serves to put the people of that generation to sleep, Alan.
It does, yeah.
Because, see, as I was writing the book, Jewish Persecution, mm-hmm. you know, that book has been a real learning experience for me, too. Mm-hmm. And, folks, if you haven't read it, if you have if you have Internet access, it's at our website at sweetliberty.org, Jewish Persecution, Tool of the International Zionist Plan for World Dominion. But it occurred to me as I was writing in a particular place, because I was raised in my teens, well, early teens, but, well, actually I graduated at 17. But it was a beautiful time for young people to grow up, and it was a beautiful time for parents. And then I got to looking back and thinking, well, Americans had gone through a decade or better of a terrible, terrible depression. And the depression only began to lift when there was talk of war. And then, of course, there was the war. People lost their loved ones, families, and et cetera. And so finally, there was, quote, peace. And the families could put their attention on themselves and their families. And it was a family time, too, Alan. Actually, it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, besides Leave It to Beaver and all that. That, you know, made us think that families are supposed to be perfect.
Yep.
And if you're not perfect, there's something wrong with you. But
right. It
was a beautiful, beautiful time to grow up. It was an innocent time. And so, therefore, my generation, when they hit the 60s, and my Jody was born in 61, Nicole born in 68, and then I was so naive that... I had absolutely no clue. I mean, the music, I couldn't stand the music, so I didn't listen to it. And so, therefore, I didn't even know what my girls were getting. And I was innocent about everything.
Yeah.
Because people of my generation, they agonize because of their children and becoming adults and adult children who seem so caught in the system. Well, it's because we were asleep at the switch, because we were put to sleep. We were lullabied to sleep, Alan.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, I am not going to talk all night, I promise you this. But there's one more thing I want to do here. This is from the Jerusalem Post. And this is the date. I'm sorry, I don't have the date on here. Legislation, this is recent. Legislation that would make Holocaust denial committed overseas an offense under Israeli legal jurisdiction was approved unanimously in first reading by the Knesset on Tuesday. Oh, July 20th, 2000. Oh, this isn't new. It's new to me. This says July 20th, 2004. The passage of the measure would enable Israel to demand the extradition of Holocaust deniers for prosecution. The bill was drafted by M.K. Eldad National Union as a move against former Palestinian Authority Prime Minister Abbas Abu Mazen for his doctoral dissertation 20 years ago, in which he estimated the Nazis killed less than 1 million Jews. It is likely to serve as a deterrence against Holocaust deniers visiting Israel, although the possibility of countries consenting to extradition on the offense is unlikely. The legislation expands the territorial jurisdiction of the Israeli law against Holocaust denying outside of its borders. So, that is a possibility, that people will be extradited to Israel if Israel calls for it, Alan.
Well, if they're dumb enough to make a big deal about numbers, because personally I think it's a landmine that was purposely put out there for fools to stand on, you know.
For what?
For fools to stand
what,
on.
What, you mean somebody who denies the... You mean people who deny the Holocaust?
It's all about numbers.
Yeah, well, there's...
And that's a fool's argument, purposely put out there for people who are not too bright. You know?
Alan?
Yeah.
Then we're going to agree to disagree on this, and we don't have to go into a debate on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk to little children, and mm-hmm. if you think that it is important for people to know mm-hmm. that was a damn lie, because that is the backbone of their whole premise on, you know, the, you can't talk about the, well, you can say neocon, I guess, because they call themselves neocons.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, it's new priests. Yeah.
I can't see how you think that somebody who finds out that the whole damn thing was a hoax and wants people to know it, why you think they're fools. It's
because
part of the lie.
It's purposely backed by every country. And
what's
that
perfectly?
tells me that they want certain fools to start arguing about numbers. Whenever you argue about numbers, you're being had.
There's a lot more.
Whether you're right or wrong, doesn't matter.
It isn't just numbers they're arguing about.
It's primarily the numbers. That's
well,
what they get them on. You know.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, for example, the gas chambers and all that stuff, that was all a lie. They weren't gassing people to death.
When you have a world government in place, it's here. It's all connected. And they've passed the laws. It's like talking about the past, and you don't see what's happening now, you know. They do this all the time. They give us things to argue about. And people fall for it, because these are emotional topics. And whenever you get an emotional topic, the emotions take over, and they rely on this. This is a technique they rely upon, that people will actually get emotions up and blurt out things or even fight, and that's what they want, you know.
Well, for God's sake,
yeah.
The German people are still paying
yes,
millions
and
millions and millions.
They'll probably get run dry for
okay.
another century.
So if we're talking on this broadcast about the truth, that is one heck of a lie, Alan.
The whole history is a heck of a lie. You know?
I know it is.
Look at how many Russians...
Well, why is it, though... Okay, yeah. And I don't mean to be arguing, but why is it when you're telling the truth about something, that's important, but
because the laws have been passed in most countries.
They haven't been passed here yet.
Yeah, but they've been passed here.
I know they have.
And they are...
I wasn't going to talk about the Holocaust tonight.
But here's what I was going to say. I mean, most of history is nothing but lies.
I know that.
And it's the same when... Look how many millions of Russian troops who fought for Germany against communism, and the Allies turned them all over to Stalin, you know, to get slaughtered.
Yep.
In a nice, humane way, you know, like machine-gunned. And, of course, that is found here and there in certain history books. But you've got to realize that these guys tell us what's politically correct and what isn't, And they know. They know what they're doing. They know that some of us are well aware of what's going on.
Maybe it's important. I think it's important because it was important to me to find out.
Yeah.
Because I believed in all that stuff, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important for me to find out the truth about it. Yeah. Just like you were just talking about the allies. Mm-hmm. Turning.
Well, they're all lies. That's what it means. You know, you're all lies.
All lies, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was important to me. So maybe it's important to some of our listeners.
Yeah, and they will, I'm sure, find out for themselves. But even finding out doesn't mean you can do much about it. That's the thing.
Well, what can we do about all the stuff you and I talk about, Alan?
Well,
nothing but know it.
Yeah, but there's still scope to move in certain areas. I always see everything as a war, because they see it as a war. And even the Skull and Bones has a war room where they plan strategy on the planet. You know, at Yale University.
Yeah, that was in their movie on Skull and Bones.
Yeah, they have a war room, and all of these high Masonic temples, the noble orders, have their war rooms. And therefore, when you see it as an eternal war, you can't look back and say, gee, we lost there. If you do, you're defeating yourself. You must always be actively looking at the present while the battle is going on.
In other words, don't heave a sigh of relief because it appears that a, quote, battle was won.
Won or even lost.
Yeah.
The lost ones, too. You've got to get on with it. You can't let them stop you in your tracks, because that's part of psychological warfare.
Yeah.
During a battle, a general doesn't look at the men who are falling, you know, and get fixed on them. He doesn't do that. And this is an ongoing war. And as I was saying earlier, I looked at Carol Quigley's book again, Tragedy and Hope. Carol Quigley, of course, he taught at a few of the Ivy League universities in the U.S. He was a chief historian for the Council on Foreign Relations. And he was pulled in to update their history records for the Council on Foreign Relations. And he had access to the parallel history that goes along with the regular stuff we get at the school. And he fills in so many blanks as to the why these things happened, rather than just dates and times and battles. And he even begins around with the British East India Company, which was owned totally by the aristocracy of England and Holland, by the way. There was a Dutch one as well. The Dutch was owned by the Queen's cousin, the royal family in Holland. And they still are combined today under many other names. And these people were basically running a world corporation at that time. And when they created what they called the Americas, the first huge slices of land in the U.S. and Canada, when it was all the Americas, were given to large corporations like the Hudson's Bay Company, which was again part of the same shareholders as the British East India Company. And you know, those patents still stand today.
Yes,
I mean, they were never revoked.
That's what you said.
Yeah, they were never revoked.
And I want to repeat what I mentioned, because mm-hmm. we talked about this briefly before,
mm-hmm.
when I was going through the history, U.S. history book,
mm-hmm.
when the children were being homeschooled. This is a homeschool history book. And I want to warn our homeschoolers, you really need to read those books and be careful of what you're teaching your children. But the thing that I noticed, Alan, that they're teaching today, and it wasn't the way they taught us. It's all contracts. That's when I realized, I said, my God, these are all contracts. That's all. They're talking about contract law here.
Yeah.
All the compacts that were made.
Mm-hmm. Yep, even the treaties and so on.
Yep.
It's a contractual law. But yeah, these characters have been ruling the planet for centuries and centuries. And they give us one version of reality, which we think is freedom, only because they keep telling us we're free. That's the reason we think we're free. They keep telling us that. And reality is when you start to go outside those barriers that are there to your freedom, that things suddenly pop up in your view and block you or stop you. And then you realize, wait a minute here, that there's limits to this freedom, definite limits, which can be very subtle at first, but very threatening later on if you continue. And we are in, really in a very good psychological reality, scientifically created. And because it's been pushed for a few generations, we think it's all quite normal, you know. Only because our parents didn't know, and all mammals look to their parents to warn them of danger. If your parents don't know, then the child grows up thinking everything's fine as well. And this continues up to the present. Even look what's happened just since the 1990 or so. All of the industry in Canada and the U.S. has been funded out of the country because the taxpayers paid for those corporations to move all their tooling and factories over to China and set up there under the GATT treaty. The taxpayers of Canada and the U.S. pay for the installation of those factories in China, and we pay for any losses incurred for the first 7 years, which can be renewed for another 7 years if they claim that they're still at a loss. So our governments forced these companies offshore. Now, they don't bumble along, these people. They make long-term strategies, a long-term business plan. And we've got to realize that they know that a service economy, which is supposed to take the place of industrial economy, a service economy is like paddling water. You're not swimming forward or backward, you're just paddling and keeping your head above it. Because you're bringing things into the country, it goes through your middlemen, distributors, down to the stores, and you buy it. Things are just passed around.
You're keeping yourself afloat barely. Yep.
And it's not meant to last forever. And the public should be aware of this. Because all the economists in every economic book and university go through all of these scenarios, and they tell you that a service economy cannot survive for long. So they know this. So what they say, well, why did they do it? And the bad news, of course, is they don't plan to have everybody around for too long once our job is over. And we have to understand that. That's their plan, you know. We've had the World Wildlife Fund tell us what the numbers are they want to reduce us down to. David Suzuki, who is a geneticist, who is a spokesman for the World Wildlife Federation and does nature programs, said we'll have to kill off thousands every week so that the animals and nature can survive. So they have told us time after time. Jacques Cousteau said it in an interview in a magazine before he died. About 9/10 of the population will have to go. So we hear these things, we see the results of where we're going, we know nothing's to take its place, and we hear these monsters talking about reducing the population. I think we should start to get the message here. Our heads are being played with big time as this agenda goes forward, and these guys are serious. They are serious. They can never come out and admit it to our faces that they're doing this, because they've crossed the line between thinking about it and actually doing it, you see. And there would be chaos if the public could possibly know what's been happening to them. And they know that. That's why they've been building up an internal army, which they are calling police, but mainly recruited from soldiers from the military, for the last 10 or 15 years, and training them in close-quarter battles, a strategy in cities, city fighting. This is for what's to come. That's why they're doing it. That's all they practice in.
We have to take a break here.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you get your pen in your hand, please? And you'll get my address. When we come back, Alan will tell you about his book, and he will give you his address. And Alan, I'll be away from the mic, so you just go right ahead, okay?
Okay.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Hello, we're back again, and my name is Alan Watt. I have three books out on a lot of the history of this occult science that runs our lives, the people involved, and the methods they use. I also go through ancient history with secret societies and show you how the same techniques were used in 4,000 or 5,000 years ago and bring it up to the present times. They're $25 each, which is payable in international postal order or else FRNs wrapped in foil to get through. And my address is send them to Alan Watt, W-A-T-T, Site 41, which is S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. That's Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, Ontario, Canada. P, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N, 1. And my phone number is 705-695-0416. That's, these are worth reading. It brings you up to speed. It also shows you the symbols that are all around you that you take for granted, and yet it's a language which is being spoken all around you. And I show you a lot of the coding, the Masonic coding and so on, the higher Masonic coding, not the stuff they use at the little blue degrees at the bottom. But as I was saying earlier about Carol Quigley, he let a lot out of the bag in his book Tragedy and Hope, even though he worked for these boys. And when he's explaining what happened in World War II, prior to World War II, there was a psychological warfare put upon the British people for 3 years, and it was done by the collusion of a handful of very powerful, wealthy people who were British lords mainly, who are in the House of Lords. It's like the U.S. Senate, only they're knighted. And he details the strategies used to terrorize, and that was his words, they terrorized the British people with propaganda for 3 solid years on a daily basis in the newspapers which these same lords owned. And they told them utter lies, and Quigley and the CFR and the Royal Institute were responsible for most of this propaganda. And they all knew that exactly what Germany's manufacturing capabilities were, what their military output was per week and per month, and yet they told the British that Germany was an invincible monster that would never be stopped, and Britain was vastly inferior equipped and wouldn't stand a chance against them. And they even told them that Germany had promised to fly over the whole of Britain and spray nerve gas from aircraft and kill everybody. And so they kept this panic going for 3 solid years to make the British people accept the declaration of war when it came. So that's what their own government did to their own people. And that should sound a sort of warning of what's happening today here. It's the same technique of terror, terror everywhere, except in front of our faces. We can't see it except from the media. And they're using the same terrorization to ram laws through and to do what they want to do while we're all stunned and shocked and living in fear. This is the same technique. And Carl Quigley said the Germans did not understand what democracy meant. And then he went on to explain how it worked in Britain. Democracy was nothing more than a handful of very rich, important people who owned the media, terrorizing the public to get the public to do what the government wanted. That is the definition of democracy. So when you have friends like that in government, who needs enemies anywhere? So this strategy is ongoing today. We hear it every day. Possible Al-Qaeda suspects seen here, seen there. They have these odd bombings going off exactly when the governments had decided to have practice bombings in the same places. The same thing happened on 9/11. They were having a practice raid supposedly on the towers that very day, just by coincidence. And we hear the same thing happened in London. So this is the same strategies over and over again, and these characters believe in the motto, the end justifies the means, which means they will do whatever it takes to get the public to go along with them. And they don't mind terrorizing every man, woman and child in the entire nation to get what they want done. Because we are nothing but cattle to them, you see. They are the shepherds. We are the meat on the hoof, and they have the big stick, and they have the media. And the media, people must realize, is an essential part of government. It's not free, it's an essential part of government. They couldn't get anything done without its cooperation,
well,
in fact, without owning it.
The same creatures who control the media control the government, Alan.
That's right. That's right. They're all interlinked. And Carl Quigley, even in going through all of this in the 1930s, gives all of the names of the big players, the aristocrats in Britain, and their counterparts in America, and shows you how they sat and planned the whole strategy to create a war, how to get the public, as I say, utterly terrified. I mean, do you realize they sent millions of children out of the big cities and up into Scotland for safety? And it was all nonsense. It was all lies. See, these are the ends they will go to achieve their goals. They don't care. The object is to terrorize the public. And so when it works like that, they're quite happy. They don't care about the fallout in the general population. They don't care about that at all. They stampede the people like a herd to get their way. I mean, Quigley even went through the part where they even got the king, the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute got the king to come out and give a speech about this gassing from the air and this immediate attack they were going to get, and it had them all digging trenches all around the streets. And it was all PR. And the only ones who didn't know were the general public, who were terrified. It was all lies. Yeah.
And behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
in their own writings,
yeah.
they were claiming Hitler does not want war,
mm-hmm.
but he will have war whether he wants it or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. And there's a lot more to that war, so much more, and Quigley does write in a very clever fashion, because he does have the exoteric there with the esoteric. You can read between the lines, you might say.
This is in Tragedy and Hope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gosh, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I've never read that whole book.
Mm-hmm. But he goes through this whole strategy. It's a world strategy eventually, of course. And he was part of this team. He believed in world government. He believed in the tri-part world, the unified Pacific Rim, including Australia. They were getting lumped into it. I've got the CFR's and the Royal Institute members' copies from the 1930s, where they discussed a unified America at the 1937 meeting in Melbourne, Australia.
I've had people ask me sometimes, how do you get your hands on this type of information? And I can only say, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I went through for that particular set, I was at the right place. I went to see a bookstore. I often ordered stuff through, second-hand bookstore, and next to it was a junk store, where they took in lots from estates and so on. And through records and junk and a lot of glassware, there was this box came in, and when I opened the first book, I said, this is gold. And I got the whole lot for about $5.
Oh, my gosh.
So somebody had died who was a member. His name is in the book. And these were members' copies. And they have every speech made every year by every person. And they have a list of all the participants in the back of the book from all the countries.
Wow.
And they literally went through in the 1937 one, the coming war with Hitler. One of the speeches said it would be very fortunate if Japan were to attack the United States and bring them into this coming war. 1937, remember?
Yes.
And they went, and then they breezed through. They said they must protect the Soviet Union at all costs. And then they went through the strategy after the war was finished, and how they would use this to force the people into world government and to give up nationalism. And they would make a tripart world, a unified Pacific Rim group with New Zealand and Australia put into it, primarily under the Orientals, you might say, and a united Europe.
Then would
and
that be
the United Americas?
Okay, there's Eurasia. What mm-hmm. what do they have them labeled? How do they have them labeled?
Well, they have East Asia.
East Asia.
Eurasia.
Uh huh.
And of course there's not
Pacifica.
Atlantis, but
Pacifica. Pacifica.
So sure they had it all laid out, and they even had it laid out in the 1937 book that they would set up China to be the manufacturer that would go into operation around the year 1990. They were dead on target.
Mm.
Dead on target, yeah. And they even had the immigration quotas of the Chinese into the west of Canada, British Columbia, that they would need to be middlemen for the incoming goods that would come into North America. They had the immigration quotas up to the year 2005. And this was 1937.
I wonder what it would cost to republish a book like that.
I don't know.
I mean, that is gold, Alan.
Oh, it's gold.
And you, mm-hmm. you know, talking about it and listening to it.
Uh-huh.
I don't doubt one word you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there is something so powerful about reading their own words yourself.
Yeah.
Because then it just does something. It's like when I was finding out about, you know, this country.
Uh-huh.
And why it was founded and who founded it and what it was based on and, you know, the whole treason,
yep.
You know, all the way through it.
Mm-hmm.
That, I cannot even explain to you how impactful that was to me in the overall picture.
Uh-huh.
Because I got a chance to see one of the huge, huge lies for what it was.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of it almost goes without saying.
Yeah.
I mean, God, those of us who were born here in America,
mm-hmm.
the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Yeah.
God, Alan. And then find out all of our heroes, like you said a long time ago, they give us our heroes.
They do. Uh-huh.
And you know, George Washington, the cannot tell a guy lie, that was royal blood and what was he, a surveyor for the East India Company for a time?
Yes, and he was.
And then
also
he came over here and surveyed this land,
mm-hmm.
and got some choice pieces, didn't he?
Oh yeah, and he made 10 times as much land during that civil war than when he started.
You mean the revolution?
Yes, Washington ended up with 10 times more than he had at the beginning.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, busy man, you know.
Yeah.
But and he was also in the British, an officer in the British Colonial Army. That's who trained him. And he was, of course, in the English lodge and another lodge as well. And he did visit the lodge during the war. He visited the British lodges.
And Thomas Jefferson was an illuminist.
Yes, and he was quite open about it. Uh-huh.
And Lafayette.
Yeah,
you know,
he laughed a lot.
I remember reading about this guy. And I thought, oh my God, isn't this wonderful? You know, he came over here from France and
mm-hmm.
he went to Valley Forge that winter and helped them, you know, learn the techniques and the war games, I guess. But
uh-huh.
then you find out he was a revolutionary. That's all he was.
He's a world revolutionist, yeah.
And he was very, very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a professional soldier.
Yeah.
And after he got done here, he went to France.
Yeah, and Payne was the same.
And yes, all of our heroes. Now, Alan,
yeah.
This is probably a ridiculous question to ask at this point in our broadcast,
mm-hmm.
because I have a feeling we would get into a conversation where we maybe could pick it up tomorrow night.
Uh-huh.
But I'm listening to you, and
yeah.
I'm trying to listen to you sometimes from a listener's ears.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, this has got to just... Okay, depopulation, you know, their plan is, we're slated for... Well, that is just mind-blowing stuff, almost
yeah.
impossible to really comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you don't disbelieve it, but you just can't comprehend it.
Yeah.
And the thought earlier tonight when we talked, I said, I would like to talk about something uplifting, and you said, that's interesting. Because I've had a couple of calls from people,
mm-hmm.
but these were people who said, can we save it? Can we take it back?
Yeah.
Well, my my train of thought was more on a more in-depth, if you would, or different level of uplifting. For example, once we accept, see it, for what it is their plan, they haven't been successful yet in all these millennia, and we don't have to, quote, believe or, quote, know that they're going to be successful today. And I know how I see how deep we are into it,
yep.
and yet I bear in mind, I keep in mind that with Creator, all things are possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying turn it around and take it all back, but maybe somehow being transformed. But the question I wrote down here, if a person's listening and says, oh, okay, they're going to kill off about, you know, 5 billion people or better.
Mm-hmm.
I could be one of them, but it doesn't really click with somebody that it could be them.
Yeah.
But then if it did click with somebody,
mm-hmm.
well, then where does that leave us? And for me, and this is open, you know, for... comments, but I mean, this is for me, that while we're here, that I cannot, I remember waking up one morning, and this was after Chuck passed over, and I would wake up in the morning and say, Father, thank you for this day. And I woke up one morning, Alan, and I said, Father, thank you for this day. And then I said, but for what? What am I saying thank you for, in other words, you know?
Yeah.
What am I here for? And then I laid there because I was, you know, in that frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
What am I here for? I cannot imagine any other purpose to be in this third dimensional illusion, but it's very real to us, other than reflecting our Creator. And that goes back to messages, you know, from Jesus, from the Buddha, any of the great masters. That what we do to another, we do to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question I wrote down here is, while we're here, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
We're not going to go, well, we could. I mean, we do have choices. We could go into a total funk and say, okay, to hell with everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's just eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow you might die. Or we could ask, why am I here? Mm-hmm. And what is it that I would be doing while I'm here? Because I am here. Not that I could stop what's happening. I don't know if it'll ever stop, because I think it's always been happening, Alan.
It has always been. At least since what they give us is civilization.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, not that... But, in other words, not trying to stop it,
mm-hmm.
but being
mm-hmm.
that way while we're here in what we do, that, like you've said so many times, the choices we make.
Yes, all individual.
It's all individual.
Mm-hmm.
But how are we going to be? Are we going to slough our kids off to a movie so we can watch a football game in the afternoon? Or are we going to really begin to look at one another and be with one another and see how precious life is if we are living in that way? You see what I'm saying, Alan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what I kind of wanted to talk about tonight.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the problem with the system we live in. It's geared against humanity and what we call humanitarianism. It's a materialistic type society.
Yes.
Where everyone is forced into this strategy because they don't give you any options. They don't even allow you to, if you want to live in a little shack in the bush, they'll find you and tax you. So you got to earn money to pay the taxes even. So they make sure that everyone's in the materialistic game, and they don't give you an out unless you literally want to get into the bush and disappear.
Well,
but the thing is,
you're here.
Yeah, and
you use what do we slave credits, FRNs?
That's right.
You know, to
and
go to a grocery store.
Thing. But you know, we can tell that religion has always been used as a support mechanism for the system.
Well, you know what? When you were talking about the wars,
yeah.
Well, you know what I heard you say, and I'll bet you didn't even hear yourself say it.
Hmm.
Their own government
yeah.
did it to their own people.
Yeah.
The government isn't ours, and we are not their people.
That's the trick of it, yeah.
That's
the trick of it, yeah.
Yeah.
You think they're your people. In fact, they aren't even your people, because these people came in hundreds of years ago into different, actually thousands in some of them, and stayed as aristocracy, interbreeding amongst themselves. And they're all 6 foot four or taller, because they ate meat all those years, and an average height of the British person was about 5 feet only in the 1900s. That was tall if you were 5 feet. The average soldier in Britain grew 5 inches from under 5 feet in the first year of World War I, just because he got so much protein.
However, there's ways to get protein without eating meat.
Well, the fact is, Jackie, these people were starved. They were kept at starvation levels.
Right.
On purpose.
The reason I said this, though, is that there are, I don't know, I think there's consideration to be made for not eating meat.
The thing is, these people were starved.
Yes, I know that.
At starvation
but
levels.
But see, what you're making it sound like is mm-hmm. that the big guys had meat.
They did, uh-huh.
Okay, fine, but they had a lot more than that, too.
When the ordinary folks started getting meat in the army, they sprouted 5 inches.
Well, it was the protein, Alan.
In the first 3 or 4 months. And they were, so they were kept deliberately stunted. People were, for centuries, were kept stunted. Now, it wasn't just their body that was stunted. Their brain never really matured either.
That would be it, yes.
And of course, they were simple then. They were easy to control, not too bright. Hard-working, but not too bright, and very cheery. That's very common as well, very happy people.
But they might have been
and
living...
And that's where the myth came, where they called them the little people.
They might
the
have
little
been...
people are not elves and fairies. They were the
right.
ordinary people.
They might have been living on potatoes like the Irish did, or living on... In other words, they didn't have a good balanced diet with the nutrients,
they had a scientifically created diet, because the big boys were in charge of the agriculture back then, too.
Yeah.
And they'd used this technique in ancient Egypt to stunt the brains of the slave generation. They knew exactly how to do this thousands of years ago. So getting back to what I'm saying, I mean, these aristocrats that became government, and then they got people from the ordinary people and put them in as front men when they created the party system, they still keep in charge of it. They've never let it go. And that's the trick. That's why they have no problems about making war on supposedly their own people and getting them to do what they want to do. It's quite easy to control them all by doing that.
Yeah.
But what's happening today is we're getting nearer to the culmination of this phase of their plan, and they're pulling out all the stops, as we can see. They've got everything in flux. They've got all the prices of everything that goes to the store has that gasoline and diesel tacked onto it, the extra cost of it. So things are going up.
Yes, they are. And you mentioned, you know, that people don't have an opportunity because everything is so materialistic.
Yeah.
Well, people do have an opportunity. And I guess the one thing that I was thinking about is for people who are, we can talk about people who don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a clue. They believe they're free. They're not happy, but they think they are because they're told they are. But I'm talking about our listeners, Alan,
mm-hmm.
who are getting it.
Yeah.
This is, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because I went through that period of time. Yeah, I told you that. I was in a never land. I couldn't grasp. In fact, I remember telling you, everything I look at, it doesn't look real. Mm-hmm. And you said, well, that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Well, so what I'm... Oh, geez, here we go. I'd like to pick this up. Can we pick this up tomorrow
night?
You
know, that sounds like it's like a boxer when the bell goes.
That's okay. I appreciate that.
And they say you have to get in your corner.
All right, this round is over. Well, we're not having rounds, though, are we?
No.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here tonight. I'd like to pick this conversation up tomorrow night, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right, folks, we'll be back with you. And do remember, you're listening to a listener-sponsored broadcaster. And if you're not a listener, if you're a listener and not a sponsor, you might want to ask yourself why. So we'll see you tomorrow night. God bless you, folks. Thanks, Alan. Good night. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War and the Right of Succession from the Old Paths Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free, or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe.